All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio here on Chaos and the Liberty Radio Network. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest on the show today is Barbara Slavin. She's an expert on U.S. foreign policy, and she's the author of a 2007 book on Iran entitled Bitter Friends, Bosom Enemies, Iran, the U.S., and the Twisted Path to Confrontation. She, of course, was assistant managing editor at the Washington Times and used to report for USA Today. You'll see her all the time on the Lehrer NewsHour and shows like that on PBS. And definitely a real expert on Iran, has been for years. Follow her Twitter at BarbaraSlavin1. And check her out also lately at Interpress Service, ipsnews.net. This one is called Mass Tragedy Feared as Closure of MEK Camp Looms. Welcome to the show, Barbara. How are you?
I'm well, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. This is a very important story. People might not really be familiar at all with the details of the background of this kind of thing, but it looks like what you describe here is an upcoming Jonestown. I've often compared the MEK on this show to the Bow and T Heaven's Gate cult, and now here we are.
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation. This is a group that lost out in the power struggle in Iran after the revolution and went on to betray the Iranian people by basing themselves in Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War. As a result, they have very limited support within Iran. But what's really tragic is that a lot of the members were basically tricked into joining young people who were separated from their families, brainwashed, subjected to, you know, almost a Maoist-type mind control. And there may be as many as 3,200 people in a camp in Iraq that the Iraqis have said has to close by the end of the year. But the camp leadership and the leadership of the MEK, it's not clear yet whether they're going to actually cooperate with the United Nations plan to evacuate the camp.
Now, and they've been at Camp Ashraf here, protected by the United States since the invasion of 2003. Before that, they were protected by Saddam, as you said. But now the Americans are gone. And as you say here, Nouri al-Maliki is saying they got to go out of Camp Ashraf by December 31st. And yet, I think you're saying here the Iraqi government wants to go ahead and allow them to go to Camp Liberty instead. What's the difference to them? Do you know?
Well, it's a huge difference. Camp Ashraf has been in existence for about 25 years. It is their, basically their base. It's where they have weapons stored, where they've done their military training. And, I mean, can you imagine the United States allowing, you know, a camp of an adversary to remain on their territory for over 8 years? That's basically what the Iraqis have done. Obviously, they didn't have a choice because the United States gave protection to the camp. But what Maliki is saying is you can't have this military camp within our country anymore. We will let you leave monitored by the United Nations and go to Camp Liberty, which is an old U.S. base near the Baghdad airport. And there, members of the U.N. High Commissioner for Refugees will be able to interview these people, separate them from their leadership, find out, you know, where they want to go, if they have relatives in Europe or the United States, or if they want to go back to Iran. Some of them have gone back to Iran, about 300 or so, and have not faced any problems or minimal problems as far as I know. But the Ashraf leadership, and particularly Mariam Rajavi, who is the head of the organization with her husband. Her husband Massoud's whereabouts have been unknown for some time. There are rumors he might even be in Camp Ashraf, but Mariam Rajavi is safely ensconced outside Paris, where she is negotiating the conditions for this transfer, and she is very reluctant to close the camp, number one. Number two, she's insisting that U.S. troops or United Nations peacekeeping troops protect the people as they're transferred, knowing full well that these are impossible demands, that the Iraqis are not going to permit U.S. troops who've just left the country to come back to supervise this. The U.N. says it has adequate monitors to monitor this 24/7, to be on the buses with the camp residents as they're transferred in batches from Ashraf to Camp Liberty, but they need the approval of the MEK leadership.
Well, now, so is it completely clear that they're doing this just to break the deal, that she is doing this just to break the deal? As you say, You know, there are no more American troops. She obviously could have asked for this last summer or just even in October or something, and she would have had enough American troops to escort these people. But you say that the UN says they'll monitor the transfer. That means what, civilians with baby blue
berets
on?
Civilian monitors, yeah. Yeah, civilian UN employees who will monitor it and will report if there are any problems and will make sure that the transfer takes place smoothly. I think the Iraqis just want to get rid of these people. I mean, they don't want a bloodbath. They don't want a major international incident. They want them out of the country as quickly as possible.
Well,
and you know, the Rajavis have wanted to keep their presence there close to the border with Iran, where they still, you know, might have some operational ability to act against the Iranian regime. But there's another factor in this, and I don't know if your listeners have followed this whole crazy case
for
a long time. Well, if they have, then they know that the Mujahideen Halk is trying desperately to get off the State Department's foreign terrorist list.
Right.
And so what Mrs. Rajavi is basically doing is holding these poor people hostage to that decision. She wants the State Department to announce that they're not a terrorist group, and then lo and behold, maybe she would let these people, you know, live. It's as stark as that, and it's as terrible as that, to my mind. Now, the State Department insists that these are separate processes. They're not going to make a ruling on the foreign terrorist list status of the MEK before December the 31st. So what she's doing is she's gambling, as I say, with the lives of these people. You know, they probably don't all have to be out of the camp by December 31st, but a process has to have started of moving them to Camp Liberty, and I would assume that at least a busload of them have to be on their way out in order for this all to work and save
the
lives of the
people.
Is Maliki
going to simply march the Iraqi army in there and force them out on that day?
Well, that's a really good question. It's going to put him, obviously, in a very awkward position. I mean, the fear is that if he starts to send troops in, that the people in the camp will commit, will provoke clashes or, you know, commit suicide in effect. I mean, I don't know if you want to call it like Jonestown or maybe it's more like Waco, you know, where the authorities come in and terrible things happen and many of the people there die.
Well,
and,
in Waco, that was Bill Clinton sent the Delta Force to kill those people. That was in the Dallas Morning News. But Jonestown
seems
like
it's going to be, you know, combination Jonestown, Waco, or Jonestown, Waco, Masada, you know,
yeah.
Use your whatever historical analogy you want. But these are people who've been so brainwashed that they will do whatever Maryam Rajavi tells them to do.
Well, and they have, there's a history of MEK cult members setting themselves on fire over minor things, right? She didn't get bailed out until, she can't get bailed out until Monday morning or something. They set themselves on
That's
fire
right.
in the streets of Paris.
Two young women in Europe who set themselves on fire and killed themselves when Maryam Rajavi was arrested and jailed briefly some years back. So this is, you know, obviously something that they are prepared to do. And, you know, they talk about martyrdom. They make a lot of really frightening comments in the camp, obviously trying to put pressure on the United States, on the Iraqis, to let them stay or to get off the terrorist list or whatever you have. And, of course, there are demonstrations in front of the State Department every day. Some of those people really are MEK members. Some of them are people who were hired for $50 a day to stand there and wear T-shirts and scream slogans.
Right.
You know, we really don't know where the money comes for these people to buy full-page ads in the New York Times and the Washington Post. It's just a mystery. And they haven't,
the
as far
American
as I know,
taxpayer.
Well, they haven't, as far as I know, committed any terrorist acts for a long time because they haven't been able to. They've been pinned down in this camp, and I don't know if they belong in the list anymore or not. But this business at Ashraf is a humanitarian situation that should be resolved. Let the United Nations resolve it. That's what I would advocate.
All right, now we'll have to hold it there and go out to this break. We'll be back after this with Barbara Slavin. She's on the Atlantic Council and writes for Interpress Service and all over the place. She's on Twitter, and her website is barbaraslavin.net. We'll be right back after this. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm talking with Barbara Slavin. Her website is barbaraslavin.net. She's on Twitter, barbaraslavin1. I found out. Poor non-one Barbara Slavin has to redirect everybody all the time, I think. That's the breaks. I got the same name as the other Scott Horton, too. So she writes for Just Foreign Policy and for Interpress Service and all over the place. The latest at ipsnews.net is called Mass Tragedy Feared as Closure of MEK Camp Looms, and it's the Mujahideen-e-Khalq communist terrorist Bowen T. Heaven's Gate cult that used to work for the Ayatollah in the revolution and killed Americans and then worked for Saddam Hussein against the Ayatollah. And then, according to my wife Larissa Alexandrovna's reporting, back in 2006, she was working for Donald Rumsfeld, killing people and collecting intelligence inside Iran. And according to Philip Giraldi on this show just 2 weeks ago, they are at least very suspected of being behind many of the assassinations and bombings, them and Jandala and perhaps the PJAC, which is a Kurdish communist group as well. I don't know if you have your own original reporting about those recent activities inside Iran. Barbara, do you know?
I don't know if they've been responsible for those activities. I do know that back in 2003, when the U.S. invaded Iraq, there was a discussion. In fact, the United States had promised the Iranians in diplomatic talks that had taken place before then that they would declare the MEK enemy combatants. Zalmay Khalilzad told me that himself. He was, of course, our former ambassador in Iraq, and he was a former negotiator with the Iranians back in the days when we actually talked to them. And the U.S. promised to declare them enemy combatants, instead declared them protected persons under the Geneva Convention. So the U.S. broke its word to Iran. Then there was an effort. The Iranians wanted to get some of the MEK leaders, and they offered to transfer and turn over some al-Qaeda members that they had captured after 2001 who were in Iran, including the number three, Saif al-Adel, and one of Osama bin Laden's sons. Mm-hmm. But I am reliably told that while the State Department, Colin Powell, even Condi Rice were supportive of this, it was blocked by Paul Wolfowitz and Doug Fife over at the Pentagon, who wanted to hold the MEK in reserve to use against Iran in some regime change scheme or in terrorist attacks at some point. So it was blocked, and as a result, we are still stuck with this problem almost 9 years later with the MEK still at Camp Ashraf. It's unfortunate because we could have gotten some key al-Qaeda leaders back in 2003 if the U.S. had been willing to carry out this swap. And instead, of course, it had dreams of regime change in Iran and didn't want to give those up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the story that now the Leverett's, then they were separate, Flint Leverett and Hillary Mann Leverett, resigned over, in part anyway.
Of course, there was the famous 2003 agenda for talks that was presented at the State Department that died a quick death because the Bush administration was not interested in comprehensive negotiations with Iran at that time.
And, you know, you have such a soft voice. It just, I don't know if the emphasis really got out there, including one of Osama bin Laden's sons, and not the one that went and gave a Rolling Stone in a night interview to Rolling Stone in a nightclub in Syria, one of the bad guy ones, and this guy Saif al-Adel, who was recently swapped with al-Qaeda for a kidnapped Iranian diplomat. After
That's right.
all this time, 10 years later, he's off a house arrest, now apparently on the loose somewhere in Afghanistan or Pakistan.
That's absolutely right. The U.S. could have swapped some of these MEK people for Saif al-Adel back in 2003, but chose not to.
Amazing. And now, I wonder if you could help clear up for me, kind of in the bureaucratic sense, in the way this plays out, what real difference does it make if the Mujahideen-e-Khalq is taken off of the State Department's terrorist list? I saw a quote from McInerney, I believe it was, General McInerney or Colonel or whatever, saying, yeah, once we take them off the terrorist list, then it's easier to use them as terrorists, which is what we want to do. It's pretty blatant. I'm not sure exactly how that works, though. Or what is it that Rajavi is so stuck on being on that list? It's not a reputation. It means that her people stuck at Camp Ashraf will be able to, what, go here, there, somewhere else, different than they're allowed to go now? Not come here, right?
Well, my fear, frankly, is that they will then try to get the U.S. Congress to appropriate funds to support them as the legitimate opposition to the Iranian government, and they will become like the Iraqi National Congress was back in the old days with Ahmad Chalabi and those other folks who got a lot of money from the United States to oppose Saddam.
And, or even the government in exile, supposedly, that Hillary Clinton recognizes in Syria, right?
Well, I don't know. They're not supported by the United States yet, as far as I know. But, I mean, also, I don't think we should conflate the Syrian National Council with the MEK. I mean, the Syrian National Council is full of a lot of very, upstanding people, some of whom I know, and seems to be, a fairly legitimate, body. It's certainly a nonviolent one. Whereas the MEK, of course, has quite a history of violence, as well as these very frightening mind control cult like aspects to it.
Well, I mean, anyone could tell that just from my email here. The MEK people are absolutely a cult. I don't know, if they're not a cult, then there's no such thing as a cult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they worship Maryam Rajavi. They have pictures of her everywhere. It's not the sort of thing you do if you are a normal democratic organization. So they will not bring democracy to Iran, and they have very little. In all the visits I've had in Iran, and I've gone there 7 times and spent weeks, months, if you add it all up, months I guess, in the country. In all that time, I've met one person who had something positive to say about the MEK.
Who wasn't one of them? Or a homeless person paid to hold the sign.
No, who was like the fact that they killed a lot of clerics in their day and who really hated the clerical regime. And there are people who are relatives of MEK members. A lot of young people joined before the revolution, and many of them were arrested afterwards, and thousands of them were summarily executed in 1988 at the end of the Iran-Iraq War, when the Rajavis, with their great intelligence, decided that even after Iran had signed the ceasefire in the war, these people sent squads of MEK people into Iran to try to, I don't know what, they thought they could still somehow topple the government. And, of course, they were all slaughtered, and then Khomeini ordered the execution of thousands of MEK prisoners in Iranian jails, many of them young people who had done nothing more than pass out leaflets before they were arrested. So these people have families, they have relatives, and I think some of the support for the group comes from those who are related to people who were killed at that time or who were killed during the revolution or immediately thereafter. So there is some support. And I've been surprised, too. The last time the Iraqis sent troops into Ashraf, there was a skirmish and a number of people were killed. And Iranian friends of mine expressed sympathy and anger at the Iraqis over this. So, they are, after all, Iranians, and they are, many of them, victims of this cult. So we really need to think about, about them. I understand there are even 4 minors in the camp. We should think about them as this goes forward.
Yeah. Well, when it comes down to it, would you place your bets on Rajavi's going to give in? I mean, unlike Jonestown, well, I don't know if it's unlike Jonestown, but I guess it's really up to her whether she considers their back up against the wall enough that they're going to go ahead and pass out the flavor aid now,
I just don't know, I just don't know. The State Department has reported some progress in talks with her. Over the last couple of days, the UN ambassador to Iraq has been to Paris to talk to her directly about this. Mm-hmm. And, the hope is that as we tick down toward December 31, she will put the lives of these people first. But, she may be worried about the tales that some of these people will tell if they're actually allowed to leave Ashraf. Numbers of people who've left the organization have talked about the kind of brainwashing they go through, the kinds of sessions where they have to flagellate themselves and talk about their sins and so on. She may not want to have those stories out there because maybe some of the former senior U.S. officials who've been taking $25,000-$50,000 a pop to speak on behalf of this group will be ashamed of themselves and will stop doing that.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. Maybe they might look bad.
Yeah.
Well, now, they do have somewhere to go other than Western Europe or America, no? I mean, if they are allowed to, be kind of separated one by one and ask, where do you want a ticket
to? That's the problem. They really don't have anywhere to go, most of them. And that's why this horrible job has been given to Dan Freed at the State Department. He's the guy who's responsible for trying to resettle people from Guantanamo. So it's rough. But, you know, some of them apparently do have relatives in Europe or in the United States. And if you can talk to them one by one, if they can be given refugee status, you know, those who don't have blood on their hands, who are simply innocent victims of this organization, hopefully there will be a way, you know, to find a home for these folks. You know, some of them might even be able to stay in Iraq as individuals. Who knows? But the main thing is to break up the organized camp that they have had in Iraq for all these years.
Well, and, you know, America just now finally pulling all the soldiers out. They could have taken care of this at any point in the last almost nine years, and they just didn't.
I mean, look, the MEK has not cooperated. They have not wanted to cooperate. They have wanted to keep this camp. And for that reason, you know, it's been very difficult for the Obama administration to resolve it. The Obama administration has been trying, which is more than the Bush administration did.
Yeah. Oh, so they really have been trying to resolve it even since he came into power, not just in the last minute here.
Well, certainly within the last year or so, they have been trying to resolve it. I know that for sure.
Well, it's a sad story. I sure hope it doesn't end up in one of these movie of the week catastrophes, but it just might.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your insight on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Everybody, that's Barbara Slavin. She's writing for Interpress Service. The article is Mass Tragedy Feared as Closure of MEK Camp Looms. And you can find her website at barbaraslavin.net. We're going to be back right after this.